Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good.
Oh, yes, and we are going to do it good today. In fact, we have so much happening. We're going to get right into it. Welcome to Express Yourself, where art, creativity, and conversation intersect. We have a big show today for you. I've got Brian Colley here with us, and he is going to fill us in on the Aspen Space Station. We had a great time up there, right?
Yeah, just last weekend. We went up and got the soft opening, and then it opens for everyone tomorrow.
That's right. You got some good intel on what it is and what's happening.
That's right. I got to sit down with Laura Whitley, who's the chief engineer, working with three other artists up there. So here's our conversation we had just the other day.
Trained in and living in and working in the Roaring Fork Valley.
Awesome. And I have gotten to visit the Aspen Space Station, but I want everyone else to learn more about it. And so what is your role in this? And maybe tell us a bit about the evolution of the Aspen Space Station.
You bet. So Aspen Space Station is an interactive and immersive art experience created by local artist Ajax Act on the backside of Aspen Mountain. Mm-hmm. We are at 9,500 feet in the forest, and we're on a mission led by the intrepid Ajax, to show that this crazy space race that we have going on overhead, this sort of land grab for space by billionaires, by the U.S., China, and Russia, is kind of a myth that we want to debunk, and that we're on an Earth is sexier than Mars mission, I guess is a good way to say it.
Oh, yeah. I love that sign. I've seen the signs you've put up around, and that's one of my favorites. Earth is sexier than Mars. So good.
So we are four artists. Ajax invited me, along with Chris Erickson and Wally, to take that theme and run with it. Mm-hmm. And we have everything from sort of highway signage to site-specific sculpture, to painting, to installation, to things that are made with elements found in our local environment, mm-hmm. plus performance and events. So it's a very diverse and fun approach to art in the woods.
Right. This is sort of a month-long event, if you will. All kinds of things happening up there.
Yes. And this Saturday, tomorrow, we're doing our official launch from noon to 7 p.m., and everyone is invited.
And how do people find you out in the woods?
Well, it's pretty... Well, how did you find us? I'd love to hear your experience, Brian, before I do.
Well, I got to carpool with people who knew where they were going, but... You do have a website, aspenspace.org, and I believe it's on there, but we take the road going out of the roundabout towards Ashcroft, and then I guess that's
Castle Creek Road.
Yes, Castle Creek Road. And then on the left, a few miles down, you'll see the road for the Midnight Mine Road, and you'll go...
Exactly. The easiest way to orient yourself is to actually punch Aspen Space Station into Google Maps, and you get the GPS coordinates.
Oh, perfect.
And it'll show you exactly how far it is. It's not far. It's a 10-minute drive from the roundabout. So mm-hmm. we really feel like you're out, far out, which is the best part, I think, of leaving kind of reality behind. Mm-hmm. But it's not actually that far. If you go to the website you mentioned, there are more specific directions, but mm-hmm. essentially there's three ways. They all involve some sort of vehicle. you can, if you have a four-wheel drive car, you can drive straight there. If you want to hike, you can drive up the two-wheel drive Midnight Mine Road about a mile, almost a mile, and then there's a place where you can get a ride at certain times, mm-hmm. and all that information is on the website. And or you can hike from there, and it's a really great community feeling because people are giving one another rides. So mm-hmm. hopping in somebody's truck or picking somebody up is all happening as well to
yeah.
get yourself into the forest.
No, I had a great time just being out in the woods and enjoying some local artists' work. There's like installation work and interactive things. Maybe talk about what you've been working on for them.
Sure. So I created a forest shrine, and it's in the tradition of Japanese Shinto shrines in the forest, and it's called Earthly Palace. And the name is a play on the Chinese space station, which is called Heavenly Palace. Mm. And I'm trying to debunk this notion that some heavenly future is out there in quotes, and when in fact it's right here on Earth. And so this is a place for contemplation, for having a conversation with the forest, for sanctuary, for just reminding us what is amazing about the forest, the wisdom that's there, sort of medicine, calming, sanctuary, all of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's made from some glass pieces that you've been foraging for, I think.
That's right. So this is part of my trash series, I guess. I just made that up. I didn't have a formal name. But I forage for old trash from former dumping grounds in Aspen. And these dumping grounds predate landfills. So this, mm-hmm. this trash is over 100 years old. It's the kind of stuff that was thrown off the edge of a cliff and out of sight. And it has endured. So these are the durable bits. I collect glass and metal and ironstone pottery. Even the soles of shoes, shoe leathers, anything that has remained through 100 years of erosion and our strong, you know, seasons. And these are all the broken bits. They're shards of, you know, detritus of our domestic lives. And in mm-hmm. this case, I am using glass. And I have been saving, the glass comes in all colors, just like sea glass. I call this mountain glass. And my one of my favorite colors is the lavender glass, and I've been saving it for a special project. And when Ajax invited me to be a part of the show and we toured the site and found a specific spot on her mining claim, I thought, this is it. Time for the lavender glass show.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And you really feel surrounded by it when you enter. You cross a little creek, and then it kind of opens up in a small area, and you're invited to sit down. And that was actually one of my favorite parts, was just having some time to hang out in the forest, do some forest bathing, I guess.
I'm so glad to hear that. I made little meditation stools mm-hmm. out of downed slices of downed trees, because I do hope that people will take the time, just like you did, to let the forest reveal itself, let the shrine reveal itself, and sort of work its magic on you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can walk around mentally for the radio show, people, just to kind of envision like what it's like when you enter, and what can people expect to see and do when they arrive on Saturday, or even after Saturday, because there's lots of things happening.
You bet. So there's a small two-track turnoff from Midnight Mine Road, and you're immediately in, like, chest-high wildflowers mm-hmm. as you walk down into this cleave in the forest. It's a very narrow little valley at that point. And the first thing you see is almost at eye level, this, like, 20-foot sculpture that Ajax has built. I don't remember the name, I'm afraid. But she is working off these sort of 1950s and 1960s space architecture and forms, but using materials that she has found online in army surplus stores or in the forest itself.
Oh, cool.
You pass her first big orb on a platform, and you come to this gorgeous metal gong by Wally,
mm-hmm.
and it's made of found metal and repurposed metal. And you continue, there's sort of a switchback, and you continue down the road into the heart of the mining claim. There's an old cabin there that's Ajax's studio that has some sculptures, some mobile sculptures inside. If you look to your right, you're now looking uphill toward the road you just came down from, and there are several sculptures, one by Ajax, two by Ajax, actually, one by Wally, and then you get to the knife-throwing area.
Oh, yes, the knife-throwing.
You try that, Brian?
I did try it, and I was celebrating gravity, which
yes,
Ajax mentioned.
Gravity defiance zone.
Yeah, I'm terrible at knife throwing, turns out, but maybe I'll come back and practice.
Yes, you know, because you can't do that on Mars. So, and that's the whole play with this, you know, all the things that we can celebrate and poke fun at about being here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've exhausted your knife throwing skills, you take a path back into the center of sort of the forest, and you get to this hammock zone in these old growth aspen trees. And that's because really what we want people to do is hang out. Yes, see the art, experience it, interact with it, but also stay a while, you know?
Yeah, I enjoyed the hammocks. That was really nice in the woods just to chill.
Right, who doesn't love a hammock, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great view from there of Chris Erickson's installation. He has five enamel spray-painted cutout pieces in his, do you remember the name of the series? Super Mega Glam?
Yeah, it's an adaptation to his Super Ultra Mega series, yeah.
And then the final place is the forest shrine. So there's a gate strewn with glass, and that marks the entrance into the shrine and the opportunity to just hang out deep in the, over there it's the lodgepole pine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a, and it's surrounded by a creek that actually does like a hairpin turn around this little piece of, this little opening in the forest.
And something I was struck by with all the artists you kind of all have in common is everything you're making has been kind of, you know, repurposed, reused material. You and Chris and Ajax and Wally all seem to find that kind of similarity. Can you talk about that? Is that like on purpose?
Absolutely, yes. But, you know, because part of this is a conversation about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about this billionaire space race when what we need folks to do is stop torching the planet and thinking we're going to leave this one and go inhabit Mars, and instead invest our time, our talents, our resources, our great ideas, our ingenuity, you know, what humans do, and turn that toward the climate so that we can stop having these smoky skies and mudslides and wildfires. And that's where we need to put our attention. And this is done in a very pointed but playful way to celebrate Earth. So it's no coincidence that many of us are taking an environmental lens to our studio practices.
Yeah, that's so great, especially for this project. Before we wrap up, could you talk a little bit about what other events are happening beyond Saturday's opening?
Yes, there is a whole program of events that goes into September.
Mm-hmm.
And having not designed the events, I don't know that I'm so well versed in being able to speak to them. But if folks go to the website, they'll be able to find lots of opportunities to come up daytime, weekdays, evening, weekends, when we have stuff going on and people can visit in the community. And I think there's also opportunity, if you know one of the artists, to visit by appointment as well.
Okay. I saw there was a painting workshop. There's forest bathing. And
yes,
that jog
this Saturday I can speak to the event.
Oh, yeah.
So tomorrow, Red Brick Center for the Arts and watercolor artist Amy Beidelman will be having a fresh earth air watercolor class, and that's free. And first come, first serve. It's from 1 to 2:30 p.m.
Oh, perfect.
At 3 p.m., there is an artist talk and tour. And there will also be self-guided scavenger hunts to find your way around the site. And I do know in the future there is forest bathing and perhaps some food-related events and the like.
And probably lots
of fun,
more
adventurous stuff ahead.
And more knife throwing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I love this quote from the website. It says, "We think even Elon Musk will admit after one night in the Aspen space station that staying here and making this planet our favorite fantasy is better than eating dehydrated food in a pod on Mars until the canned oxygen runs out."
Here.
Yeah. So, wow. I hope people get inspired to go to the Aspen Space Station this Saturday or check out the website aspenspace.org. Anything else you, Chief Engineer Laura Whitley, would like to add?
Yes, the programming is all free. There's no admission charge. Artworks are for sale. And so just come on up and check it out.
Awesome. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's always fun.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home.
All right, we're here with Rocket Man, Brian Cawley. Great interview. Great interview. Thank you. Pretty cool location, huh?
Yeah, it's just so nice to be out in the woods, forest bathing.
Forest bathing, I love that. Yeah. That's a great description. All right, I hope everyone out there gets a chance to check it out. You're tuned in to KDNK's Express Yourself. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, here with Brian Cawley.
Hello.
And we also have Bob Sima on the phone. He is calling in. He's going to be performing in Carbondale for the Center of Human Flourishing next Friday, August 20th at the 3rd Street Center. And this will be their third trip to Carbondale. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Amy. Bob and Shannon, we're both here.
Oh, good. Shannon is there, too. Shannon Plummer, good. I realized I should have asked if we were lucky enough to have Shannon, and it sounds like we are. All right. So, you know, what you two do is unique because you combine the music in a and healing. Can you talk about that?
Well, good question. I mean, I think it's just that the music is written. I mean, the songs are written from the perspective of it's always maybe a spiritual lesson or something that I need to work on. They're all very personal, right? I'm a songwriter, so but they're really specific. It's like therapy for myself, so that I guess when we perform the songs, and of course you bring it in, you know, live with my voice and Shannon's voice and the guitar and the message and the words and just everybody breathing at the same pace. You know, sometimes we do breath work in the concerts. You feel a healing. You feel the message getting through. You feel the visceral response of the room. You know, each person receiving the message in a different way. So, yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. It's just when you get a room full of people and you start singing about the heart, you start singing about life, and I think it's just like the heart opens up and it allows itself to a little bit of salve to dip into it and create a little bit of healing.
That's right. And a lot of people are really feeling the need for that right now. So I think the timing is good. Now, Shannon, you describe yourself as a shaman?
A shamanic practitioner, yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you tell our listening audience how does that get woven into this at all? Or where does that aspect of your life enter into this performance?
Well, I would say, from my mentors, the job, I would say, the responsibility of the shamanic practitioner is to become the hollow bone. So allow our personality to dissipate, to almost disappear, and allow those frequencies, those vibrations, those messages to come through us, as us, and be delivered in message. And I always say, Bob is the songwriter, and I have the privilege of adding harmony to that, of adding another layer of depth, another layer of breadth, mm-hmm. with that, with those harmonic notes. So I would say that's how it's woven in very practically.
All right. Do you two songwrite together at all?
No, we don't. No. We haven't yet. I would say not yet. That's a hopeful response, right?
That's great. Well, you have Where the Light Gets In Ministries, a 501(c) whose mission is to provide personal growth programs to reach underserved populations and youth. Can you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, Where the Light Gets In is pretty much a line out of one of the songs. The wound is where the light gets in. So we just really felt called to develop a nonprofit so that we could get this music and this, some of the other things we do beyond just concert. I wouldn't say just a concert, but beyond a concert is we do meditations, we do workshops, we do retreats, and we do breath work. We teach people really ancient techniques of breath work that can help them. So the nonprofit really is designed to help us get that to folks who really don't have the funds, mm-hmm. or just don't have access to cultural arts centers like they do in Carbondale. And we've really just started that in the last year, so it's been a little challenge to get it off the running in the middle of the pandemic. But the mission is to get it to people who need it the most, that the people that aren't running around to cultural arts centers doing, concerts. And it's people that, we were looking at incarcerated, in prisons and treatment centers, places like that. Right. People that just really, really are needing it,
Absolutely.
So that was the mission of the nonprofit.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. So in your trip to Carbondale, what is it that always draws you here? And is there something that you experienced when you're here, since it is your third time? And I guess we're pretty lucky to have you keep coming around. Is there something here that draws you?
Oh, well, I mean, do you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say the community that we have connected with and are so honored to have met and continues to support and really receive the messages of, whether it's a meditation, whether it's a concert, whether it's the lyrics, whatever it is, wherever they are, they allow themselves to so deeply receive, mm-hmm. what we have always presented there. And that is more than we could ask for from any audience, if you will, to be so open that it all becomes a co-creation. And that's what we always feel in Carbondale.
Oh, that's great. Well, I think your timing is good because it's the Way of Compassion Film Festival. It's an online celebration. And this year's theme is Healing Together. And the Way of Compassion organization is over at Third Street as well. They do a lot of work with Rita and the Center for Human Flourishing. So anyways, that is all online. You guys should take a moment to check that out. That goes from the 13th to the 22nd. So it feels like you're just part of this whole experience as well, which, has some nice symbology to it.
We're typing it in right now, for sure. I mean, I have a song called Metta, which is a Buddhist chant that is of loving compassion. So, I mean, we always sing that for this event. And it's a song that everyone sings around the room. It's, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you be loved. So it doesn't surprise me at all that you'd be having that festival going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So it would be great to meet some of the people in the festival and mm-hmm. and it would just be the, you know, maybe the musical soundtrack to a lot of the themes going on over there.
Exactly.
In some of those films. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I have a song queued up of yours, Together We Rise, which I will play as we go out. But before we go, can you tell everyone where they can find information out about Where the Light Gets In
sure.
and Bob Sima Music?
Yeah. Well, basically, it's just wherethelightgetsin.us. So, you know, Where the Light Gets In, L-I-G-H-T, gets in, .us. And everything is all there. It's all my music. It's all Shannon's shamanic work. It's the retreats that we do, the workshops. It's the nonprofit. It's all there. It's a big, big website with lots of cool stuff. So you can listen to a little snippet from each song. You can download music, you know, all kinds of stuff there. So.
Well, thank you so much, Bob and Shannon. We'll see you here next week in Carbondale. And folks, don't miss it. Friday, August 20th at the Third Street Center. And you can find all information. There's a Facebook page. The concert starts at 7:30. Hey, safe travels, you guys.
Yes.
Thank you so much
for having us. We're really grateful. Thank you for having us on.
You bet. Thank you.
Right.
If you want to go fast, then go alone. If you want to go far, you better bring somebody else along. In the moment of darkness, in the moment of truth, think your lucky stars that there's someone there with you. There's a beauty in numbers, it's impossible to deny. It takes two hands to applaud and a pair of wings to reach the sky. Where there was one, there will be many. Where there was nothing, there will be plenty. When meat turns to weed like the roots from the tree, it pushes everything up from underneath. Well, together rise, together we thrive. We believe in circles, 'cause circles take no sides. Together we win when everyone is in. When every little hand and every little heart touches every little piece and every little part now. Start a revolution, reach out your hand and lift up a brother, a sister, and feel.
All right, that was Bob Sima and Shannon Plummer, and they'll be in town next week. All right, as if there is not enough to get on your calendar, you better leave the 26th open for Ecstatic Dance with Alya Howe and Professor Chai. Professor Chai, a.k.a. Alan Graham Davenport, he is a KDNK DJ, has been a lifelong fan of music and movement. He studied the tablas in India and West African music with teachers from Mali, Guinea, and Zimbabwe. He has wandered to many remote parts of the world looking to connect with indigenous intelligence and healing traditions. And Alya is well known in this valley. She is a dance teacher. She has a background in ecstatic dance. She also teaches yoga. She worked every Friday with the group Motion in Philly. She also studied under Gabriella Roth in New York City and danced. She actually came to the USA, and I don't know how many people know this about Alya, to dance and improvise with Zakir Hussain. So you may know her. She does a lot of storytelling in salons here in the valley under Alya's umbrella. So here we go. I was lucky to catch up with them the other day. Here we go. Hi, Alya.
Hi,
and hi, Professor Chai.
Hello there.
What a joy to have you guys with me. You two have teamed up to create a ecstatic dance sound journey on the 26th of August at the Heart Barn at 13 Moons Ranch. Tell our audience a little bit about ecstatic dance first, Alya, and what it can do to a person as they engage in it.
Ecstatic dance is a way of listening to the body. All day long, we follow our mind, our plans, our to-do lists, and our body just follows along happily or sluggishly. And especially having come through difficult political times, environmental times, pandemic times, job and housing security insecurity, people are anxious and stressed, and this particularly addresses the vagus nerve. Ecstatic dance helps us move into the part of ourselves that listens to how we feel. And when we listen to how we feel, we begin to notice, are we breathing? How's the breath? And then the vagus nerve is, well, it's a 12th cranial nerve, and it tells us, the body, the nerve tells the body how it's feeling. It's not the mind to the body, it's the body to the mind. And it's specifically about feeling safe and secure. And I think as we're coming into new, more expansive times of learning how to live with the existence of COVID in the world of environmental and climate changing, that it's important that we tap in and feel that we feel safe right now. And ecstatic dance, no steps to follow, nothing on how you should be. You move how your body wants to move. You might just sway for the whole hour. You might let the music move you, the trees, the stars at the Heartbronn. You can be inside rolling around on thick padded mats, or you can be outside dancing underneath the stars. And the music will follow the ambient of the room. It will encourage you to be expansive. It will encourage you to go internal. So there's a pulsation and a rhythm. And connecting with yourself, feeling yourself, is unbelievably valuable right now.
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of ecstatic dance, and I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun because it just the longer it's happening, the more you are taking on a journey and just seem to go with it. So, Alia, as a guide of ecstatic dance, what role do you play in it?
Setting up boundaries. In terms of being mindful about other people being in the space, not hitting them. There is no talking during an ecstatic dance session. If you want to talk, go out by the river and talk. But this is about feeling your breath, feeling your body, and not being in verbal communication, but in a physical dialogue with yourself, with nature, with the other bodies in the room. For our first one, I'm not going to encourage contact, but just really to breathe and feel, who are you right now? And it's so important to feel what you are feeling and breathe and be with that. It's the doorway to healing with yourself, healing with your place in the world, with the community. So as a leader, it's watching when the energy drops, how to bring people back in. Do I need to energize the room, or do I need to bring people down into a more meditative space? When I lived in Philadelphia, every Friday night, a German couple called had a dance company called Group Motion, and they'd gather all the professional musicians who wanted to show up from Philly and all the people in a body, lawyers to dancers to every sphere of work, would come together, and we'd be led through quite structured improvisations and then into free-flowing. And so I'll use influences like that. I was in New York with Gabrielle Roth when she was developing the rhythms, the eight rhythms, and then just working as an improvising dancer, knowing how to trust that how my body wants to move is just perfect for that moment in time, to get the judgmental head out of the way and to move into the force of the body. And you as a mom, yeah, you know the force of the body, just giving birth to babies.
Yeah, absolutely. And music obviously plays a huge part of this. And we've lost Professor Chai up there in Missouri Heights. But can you talk about how do you two work together to prepare for ecstatic dance? Or does he just kind of do his thing and you do your thing? Where do you two intersect?
We intersect where he shares, or hopefully will share with me, some of the music he's thinking about. And then we'll talk about how we signal one another if we need to bring the energy up or if we need to bring the energy down. Alan has big ears. I noticed him when he was playing for African Dance here in the community with Eric. And these musicians here have incredible ears for pulling out interesting textures. And then I don't know if you ever listened to their late night radio show, but it was out there in terms mm-hmm. of color layered with interesting rhythms. So I have no idea how we work together. This will be our first time, and it's an adventure. But I am certainly excited to hear what he brings together. So there'll be a mixture of recorded music played through a sound system and percussion on top.
Oh, nice. So there'll be some live drumming as well. You know, it's really interesting when you start out in a collaboration with someone. You may imagine where it may take you. But in a journey like this, where there is a lot of improvisation that happens right in the moment, it can get really exciting.
I hope so. I imagine so. And it's a little nerve-wracking, too, like a new relationship. But I'm excited. The energy at the Heart Barn is just magnificent, and the nature and the land out there. And it's an exploration for all of us, and it's not long. We get together there at 6:15 p.m. We'll start the circle at 6 p.m. and we'll be finished, 6:30 p.m. and we'll be finished 7:30, 8:45, an hour of solid dancing, and then we'll gather again in a circle at the end just to hold and hear where people are if they want to share anything. And then we just take that experience with very little words out into the rest of the evening.
Yeah, very nice. 13 Moons, for those of you that don't know, is located down or up Highway 133, right across from Sustainable Settings. And I assume you'll have some markings there.
I'll hang some balloons outside because I often miss the entrance and there's an easy turnaround. It's before the bend. Up to the KOA. So just after Sustainable Settings, start looking for balloons and little signs out for the last driveway on your left.
And do people need to sign up in advance, or how does this work?
No, they can just show up. The fee is $15. If people want to help out with the event, setting things up, then we'll scholarship people in. Just reach out to me, and you can find me at 970-309-2582.
And it's also important to bring water and wear clothes you can sweat and move in. Very good advice for ecstatic dancing. Hopefully everyone leaves with a big smile on their face, and hopefully this is not the only one. I assume if this feels good, it's something you will look at continuing.
I would like to do it on a regular basis, aligning it up with natural rhythms, with the astrology, with the moons, but trying to find auspicious dates that are really great to tune in, to listen in, and go within.
Well, it sounds wonderful. Ecstatic Dance at the Heart Barn at 13 Moons Ranch, August 26th. For those of you that do know Alia, you know that whatever she does it really well. And it seems like a great time. If you have never done ecstatic dance, I feel this will be a really great, safe environment to try it out. So thank you so much for being here with us, Alia. And also, thanks to Professor Chai up there in Missouri Heights, where the communication gods did not allow him to pop on, but you can be sure his music will take us all on a journey. Thank you.
Thank you.
that is a little Bach behind us because we are here in the studio with Minsa Wu, and Brian Cawley is still with us, which is such a beautiful thing. Minsa is the founder and artistic director of Benfeng. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Benfeng.
Benfeng Music Production. She's a violinist, a presenter, a collaborator, a curator, a visionary. Just an incredible woman. And we are lucky to have her living here in the Roaring Fork Valley. But she has been heard on stages from the pubs in Poland, opera houses in Italy, concert halls in Australia, U.S., Taiwan, and remote villages in Newfoundland. But we are lucky because next week, on Wednesday and Thursday, the 18th and 19th, we have a show, Death of a Pugilist, that Minsa has created, curated, and is bringing to us. It's extremely exciting, and I think let's just really delve right into what is this? I had to learn what a pugilist was.
So I should bring my own memory back to when Jim gave me this story. It's off the Harper's Magazine. And he said, you've got to read this. And I said, pugilist? Does that mean boxing? I'm not a fan of boxing. I'm not going to like this story. He said, just read it. And after I read it through, I was so captivated that I had to read it again, right away, and by the second time, I think the idea of this production was conceived. And it's interesting that you mentioned the remote villages of Newfoundland, because when this production was first presented, I was invited by the Grossmore Summer Music in Newfoundland. And we got to present a show in Cowhead and Rocky Harbor and Norris Point to like 20-30 people. Wow. But I have to say that was really the beginning of this long, long journey that I'm still on, in which to really find music of different genres and different styles and interweave with stories and words into a bigger context. And if we were to just, you know, very quickly recap the Garden Music series that we've been journaling together, the first one was really about nature and beauty, and the second one is about love and passion. The third one is about elegance and delight. Now this one is about struggles and finding the hope and finding even joy in the struggles.
Wow. It is true. The Garden Music Series has been an amazing journey. And that's what curation is about. And that's why I really honor the talent and artist's eye that you have to be able to take us on this journey. Let's, for this final show, we are at the Orchard in Carbondale, and we're out in the back in the amphitheater.
Right.
And this is not just like coming to a concert. This is almost like an opera, is what it sounds like to me, in a way. Can you describe, as people are sitting there, what is it that they're going to kind of see and feel?
Right. So I call this an experimental ensemble piece. So it's really hard to describe until you are there. So I urge anybody who is just a bit curious to just come out and check it out, because it's not the kind of concert experience where you are just listening to the performers presenting their best masterpieces. This is really storytelling, which is the oldest traditional form of art. And besides that, it's a very captivating story. We have an ensemble of five who we together would be playing maybe 12 instruments and with different music selections from Bach to Philip Glass, Stephen Reich, the minimalistic music, to folk, to blues, to jazz.
Irish? Or do we get a little Irish?
And we do. We have a lot of Irish because the time period of this story was 1850 England Quayside. And it was really interesting when we were scouting out the venue. I wanted something a little bit just kind of hidden, because we were talking about the event that was kind of illegal and behind, under the radar, and, you know, things that happened not quite in your, you know, beautiful mansion, but really rough and tumble type of neighborhood that we're talking about.
And so the back of the orchard is the rough and tumble neighborhood.
Perfect.
You can feel it. You can feel it back there. It's fun. We were there this morning, and it got me really excited. The other good news is if it does rain, because we have had a bit of rain during these performances, we will just be right inside the orchard, so there won't be a change of location,
right?
Which will be nice for people. Yeah. So let's talk about some of these musicians that are coming. I know Eric Thorne from, I think, bluegrass, really. Let's talk about this core group of musicians.
Yeah, so you know Eric Turin is an incredible musician on bass and guitar, but have you ever heard him playing the tuba?
No. Oh, my gosh. All right.
So something I always love doing, and me included, is to really push ourselves outside of the comfort zone. So you're going to see me playing the piano. You're going to see Eric playing the tuba. You're going to hear Joy Adams, who is an incredible cellist and banjo player, singing blues. And you're going to hear Jam, who is a great folk musician, narrating this story. And Blaine Cheston is another wonderful musician who is playing in the same ensemble as Eric Turin and his lovely wife, Jessie Burns. They have a Celtic trio now.
Wow.
That they've been playing. And so all of these people, we have really crossed paths in very meaningful ways, either musically, artistically, or personally in the past. But this is the first time that we got to be together and create this experimental ensemble piece together. And like I say, you know, these people are really like musicians with no boundaries. They could just go to places. And for a project like this, it's especially fun because really the story is like a map. And we could go to all these emotional places with our instruments, with our music, along with the words.
That's so fun. You're like a musician painting with music and, you know, sound, making a soundscape and a narrative for everyone to get and dive into. I can't wait.
You got it. That's exactly right. So we were really soundscaping together with this story.
Wow. And so this is the first time you've done this piece with these musicians. You were just up in Lyons, I believe, rehearsing.
Right.
And so how did that feel?
It was great. So we got to rehearse in someone's living room. With a honky-tonk piano. Actually, it's a grand piano, but it's out of tune and all that, which was just perfect. It was a tiny little space. So when Eric, you know, brought out the tuba and the bass, it basically filled up half of the room. But we wanted to experience something that's just slightly uncomfortable. You know, it's not the whole story is about just trying to make it. And when I was asked by Amy to curate this, I immediately wanted to bring this without thinking about all this psychological connection. And the reason I want to bring this is because I really want to honor this piece and the author who, through the pandemic year, Daniel Mason, he put together a collection of short story, and The Death of the Pugilist was the opener of that book. And it just felt really right as the first time presenting something of this juncture to the community here, that this would be a good place But later I realized that, gosh, we are all experiencing something just kind of relentlessly difficult.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even though we're 2021 and that was 1850, we're in Carbondale, that was quayside of England. But there's some of this innate struggles and something very raw and very human. I feel like it really still resonates a lot.
Wow. I think I want to read. Is it worth it to read the short story before we see the performance, or should we wait and then read it after?
Depends on what kind of person you are. I'm the kind of person that like to know the ending before I step into the movie. If you want to be completely surprised, I would say just come and, to the show.
So is this for all ages? Would find some connection, or do you feel it's
I think a three-year-old might not be able to get it, but like I say, it's a storytelling. So and such wonderful writing, I would say kids six and up should be okay.
Yeah,
there's nothing. Let me just think about it. Yeah, it's a very graphic description of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Of the boxing event, mm-hmm. And death of the pugilist. So there is that.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But I think anybody, I would say, you know, my two girls, they love the story, and they're 9 and 11. So
yeah.
There's your radar.
Yeah, and I think also for kids, they may not pick up on the depth of the story, but they might pick up on the fact that there's music in there, mm-hmm. with some story, and there's, you know, it just holds your attention,
right.
Whether you're getting that exact understanding.
So like what Brian was saying, there are colors, mm-hmm. in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you can see where you are,
mm-hmm.
and there's rhythm. And there's counterpoint there. Yeah, there's a lot
That's something I remember as a child, actually, is listening to things like Peter and the Wolf, where you have the music and the narration going through, and it's just so vivid in your mind. You don't need to see, like, a movie to understand what's happening. And I can't wait for that kind of experience just to light up my mind and take me wherever this goes.
Yeah, in a way, I guess when I was experiencing this particular story, it did feel like I'm much younger. A young audience listening to the story being told by someone who, you know, was at the event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's such a cool tradition, too, just to have, like, that kind of oral kind of tradition where you're listening to people telling a story. There's music, too. I think that kind of cements it in your mind, like something like Peter and the Wolf. But this is going to be great.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the evening, the way it flows. We've got a couple minutes. The orchard, you'll enter the orchard. We suggest people bring pillows because it's a amphitheater, but the seating is cement, and we'll have some pillows there too, so people can have comfy seating. There's also room on the grass above, and we'll have some chairs set up as well. But you don't have to bring chairs. And it's a very intimate setting. I'm very excited to see a show back there. We've never done one. People are welcome to bring food if they want, you know, whatever they would like to drink. It's just a very relaxed, enjoyable setting. And we encourage people to come. It starts at 6. We'll open up the doors, you know, I think if people come around 5:30, 5:15, that gives you plenty of time to get settled. And tickets, you can get your tickets. We do still have tickets left for Wednesday and Thursday at carbondalearts.com. Go to events, and you probably also can link to it from the homepage as well. But if you go to events, you'll see the Garden Music Series. It's been an incredible series. I'm sad to see it end, Minsa.
Oh, let's do some more then.
yeah, we will, because you have taken us on a journey and educated us so well. Is there any place, if someone wants to learn more about you, where they might go?
they could go to Carbondale Arts, and then they will help to connect. And there are a couple of things I really love about the orchard is that the parking is so easy, and there's no bad seat in this place.
That's true. That's true. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you,
I encourage everyone to check this out. It's well worth it. Bring the family and have an experience we don't often get here in Carbondale. I will say this. It will be a unique once-in-a-lifetime experience, unless we do some more shows with you next summer, which I hope we do.
Yes.
And who knows what you'll bring. Minsa Wu, this has been Express Yourself. We really appreciate everyone being here with us. And we will be back next week. Right, Bri?
You know it. Express yourself.
Express yourself. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. There's so much to take in. In fact, real quick, the Arts Campus at Willits Basalsa is back. Takah plays host to this family-friendly event this Saturday. And also, stay tuned for the live broadcast of Gabrielle Louise.